Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the New York Democrat, says that welfare benefits for legal immigrants may yet be restored in the next Congress, but not the entitlement to assistance for children living in poverty. Immigrants have more political influence than babies, he says. The senator is a social scientist by trade who worked in both the Johnson and Nixon administrations. He was elected to the Senate in 1976. In a new book that collects his thoughts and recent speeches on welfare and poverty, it's called Miles to Go, Moynihan recalls the debate in the last Congress over welfare. He vehemently opposed and greatly regrets the conservative welfare reform bill that was passed and signed by President Clinton. But he credits conservative thinkers, like the sociologist James Q. Wilson, with having asked serious questions about social policy in general and about welfare in particular.
What conservatives did say is that what we call welfare reflects a change in our society, the social structure, that is unlike anything that has ever happened in history. There is no society in history where you've had the breakdown of family as we have, and it's concentrated in our large cities. Our 50 largest cities today, 48% is the average ratio of non-marital births. Well, this is a mysterious and ominous and baffling phenomenon. And don't act like you know what's going on here. You don't. The conservative role of telling liberals, hey, you don't know that much. Mm-hmm. They found themselves telling conservatives, you don't know that much either. Be very careful. It was the conservatives in this case telling conservatives, you don't know enough to put at risk a quarter of the children of the country. Because that's the number, if I can say, Robert, a quarter, 24% of children born today would be on AFDC by the time they're 18 at one point.
And that group of children is incredibly disproportionately black. True?
True. Disproportionately urban. Both those things, but the numbers spread, but they're concentrated. When you have in the nation a third of all children born to single parents, you're getting a pretty diffuse phenomenon.
But how you acknowledge and you write about this, and I still don't understand how one reconciles. It seems to be this uniquely unprecedented American phenomenon of the breakdown of the family and the great rise in births out of wedlock, with similar trends elsewhere. You have a chart reprinted which tracks births to unwed mothers in England and Wales as opposed to here. And it's the same line going up.
Yes.
It's the same line.
Here, let me make a distinction. The rule goes back to Malinowski. His principle of legitimacy is propounded in 1930. He said, the one thing anthropologists have learned throughout the world, we studied New Guinea, the New Hebrides, New Jersey, every child has an acknowledged father that is his sociological father. They know his name. They know each other. This new phenomenon is where they don't or have no real connection.
You mean that's what's different?
That's
in
what's different. And no one's saying, hey, this is my kid. I am responsible for him, and I'll look after him. That begins here, and it spreads. It spreads to Canada, spreads to England, spreads to France. Does not touch Japan, hardly seen in Italy, and so forth. I write in this book in the last chapter, it's called The Coming of Age of American Social Policy, that for the last century, most of the things that we've dealt with in social issues first appear in Europe as problems, and the solutions appear in
Social security,
unemployment insurance, health insurance. These are all European things which we bring in because the problems first showed up over there. This question of social structure and cohesion and child relationship to adults, that first appears here. It now is spreading elsewhere. But for the first time, we're going to have to figure out some answers. That's why I put the phrase the coming of age of American social policy.
Now, I once did some reporting on a program out of Dayton, Ohio, that was really acting out of your your welfare reform from the 1980s, from the Bush years.
Yeah.
And one of the things that people there found working with the absentee fathers whose children were on AFDC was that there was more contact with their children than they had known. But in fact, such contact being discouraged by the law was kept kept quiet. Do you attach any importance at all to the notion that welfare discouraged families, that welfare, in a way, made it advantageous not to get married?
I don't dispute that. I simply say that it may have facilitated a profound change that was taking place anyway. It made sustainable a otherwise impossible situation, but I don't see how it is the triggering phenomenon, because it comes from, you know, we've had AFDC since the 1930s, 1935. This, we picked up this phenomenon in 1965, and it came as something we could not explain. And 30 years later, we still can't.
Well, one analysis, though, of what happened with welfare reform and with ending that entitlement was that Bill Clinton, rather than stand in the way of such an action, threw a bone to the conservatives, removed the issue from the 1996 election debate, and therefore was reelected. And your party, while a minority in Congress, retains the White House. Was it worth it?
That's behind us now. It was a decision made when, remember, in the Senate, on the first vote on essentially the same legislation the president eventually signed, we had 12 Democrats in opposition.
Mm-hmm.
13 votes were nay because one Republican thought the bill wasn't tough enough. So the whole party, the Democratic Party, had changed its mind out of a kind of despair at what nothing seemed to be working, and you get this kind of convulsive response. It's not a good way to legislate when you're dealing with children, but we did.
And if you hadn't done it, or if the Democratic president hadn't done it, it's quite possible that he wouldn't have been reelected. I mean, I just wonder how, as a politician, is that the kind of a trade-off one makes and is reasonable, or was it a bad trade-off?
It was a rational one, and you can't disprove it. I'm happy to say my friend Paul Wellstone, who was the one Democratic senator, incumbent senator, who was running for re-election, who voted against this measure, he won very well indeed.
Senator Wellstone of Minnesota.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you, in these essays and speeches about social policy, only a couple of times, if that in passing, do you mention affirmative action, which really hasn't been a legislative issue. It's been more judicial over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But considering its place in the discussion of income disparity and racial division in the U.S., what are your thoughts on it?
The problem with affirmative action is that it very quickly became a form in which persons who were pretty well off got better off, leaving other people totally behind. And then the opposition began, I have to say, just as a fellow, assistant secretary of labor, a lot of middle-class people thought it was just great as long as you got U.S. government was telling building trade plumbers what to do.
Mm-hmm.
When they started deciding, well, who gets into medical schools, that becomes something very different. And that's called class, and who should deny that in existence? The Californian Civil Rights Initiative passed, and that has to be a large event. I guess I've always, for better or worse, been one of those that say these issues are ones of class, not race, and work on the problems of the poorest people in the poorest places, and the other things will take care of themselves.
And had you been a California voter, do you think you would have voted for or against the California Civil Rights Initiative?
Oh, I'm going to pass on that because I read a long article by Glenn Lowry who says, I've always been for this, And I suppose I would have voted for it, but I'm not sure.
But a subject of doubt, at least in your mind, of some, well, I of don't some
want,
conflict.
I don't want a large portion of the American population feeling they're being discriminated against. And we'd like to get rid of, we like to have, the Constitution is colorblind, and so should American society. Not in every regard, but in the main.
Now, last big point about family breakdown and births out of wedlock. Is it something that the government can actually do something about? Is there any policy or legislation that that you can undertake that would reverse or modify the direction away from marriage first, children second?
I would almost certainly say that government can do very little. On the margin, some things. This is a societal change, and we have to change our society or learn to live with what we have. I don't think we can sustain what we have for another generation. We will have this for another generation, but another half century? No, you won't. This country won't be working well a half century hence if we go on the way we are. I think it is fundamentally a matter of personal responsibility, of character, of what is expected of persons. We did have a bad break in the 60s when these problems began to become evident. A lot of people went around saying, well, you know, it's an alternative lifestyle. Fine, buddy, it's an alternative lifestyle for somebody else. I notice you're not choosing it. But there was a certain sort of, well, you know, just do your own thing.
Vicarious experimentation.
Yes, sir. Case. Nicely phrased, Robert. A vicarious experimentation and a disastrous one for the child.
Well, Senator Moynihan, thank you very much for talking with us today.
My pleasure. Indeed.
Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan of New York is the author of Miles to Go, A Personal History of Social Policy.